You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to another episode of Fly on the Call, candid conversations on music. Hopefully this week I'm welcoming some new listeners who are sticking around after last week's episode with Silverstein, which has been by far the most popular yet. So thank you for all of the support, whether that was your first episode or you've been around from the beginning. Today I'm talking to Brian Walker, who through his project A Day Without Love is probably one of the hardest working people in DIY. We talked about his many collaborations throughout this year, fostering a community, his podcast, Dreams Not Memes, touring as a solo artist, and his upcoming tour documentary. As you can tell, there's a lot of ground to cover, so let's hop right in. I kind of have a lot of like big general questions. And I guess I just wanted to start by asking kind of what have you been working on? What are you like excited for lately?
I'm definitely working on a lot as a musician. I'm just going to count it out. I have multiple singles waiting to be released. I have a single with two rappers, Internal Rhyme and Mikey Mayo, coming out. It's a song called Live Your Dream All Night Living Fantasies. That title might be changing, it's subject to change, but that's pretty much the song. And I just do side vocals there. I have a song about internet culture where I sing a hook on another rapper song. And it's basically about how people love to flex on the internet, but don't have really much to prove it in person. So there's that song. I have a jazz song with a local Philly band called Brother Martin. I have another jazz song with the North Jersey Act. So that's coming out. The reason why I'm not saying his name, because I don't know if he's changing his band name or not, because it keeps going back and forth. I am working on a mini EP with two songwriters. One does math rock, and the other one is kind of like a Midwestern emo sound. So I've got that going on. I don't know when that's going to come. I've been working with another songwriter about relationships and addiction. She's in two bands, but we have no idea when that's coming out. And that's pretty much it for my collabs. I have a side rap project I'm working on that's like TBD, and then I'm also working with producer Plead the Filth on a spoken word / rock song. So that's all like my side project. I just released a single to a documentary score / album that I'm working on. In the same way that Kendrick did Black Panther, and like worked with a bunch of people, I'm going to be writing like an acoustic folk record about life on the road and DIY culture and the differences of like what it means to be diverse. So I'm writing that for a documentary because I went on a documentary tour earlier this year. And I'm now doing the conceptualization / drafting of my third official full-length record. And I have 4 Weekenders and a bunch of local shows left, or 3 Weekenders, 3 or 4. And then I could officially say that I played, I believe, almost 100 shows this year. Oh, wow. So that is all that I'm working on, basically. There's other stuff I'm working on in my life in general, but that's just the music stuff. Yeah, and just trying to get better and be the best that I can be.
For sure, yeah. I mean, that's super rad and keeping you very busy, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So I guess there's kind of a lot to unpack there, but one of the things I wanted to talk about was like all the collaborations that you've been doing this year and kind of like, you know, how so many of them have had different variations in style. And it sounds like that's something you plan to continue doing in the future. Can you talk a little bit about how that like project came together?
Yeah. So I played a couple things in my head. So I'll start with like why I wanted to start collaborating as much as I could. This is kind of a criticism of DIY culture as well as today's music. I kind of got tired of the two EPs, a split, and a full-length album, and then you're done. I think it's just, like, way too cliched. It's limiting. It's insular. It's borderline masturbatory, because then you end up using the same album artist that everyone uses. And then I started to listen to Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book, and I was really obsessed with how different it was. And I fell in love with hip-hop again, because my music journey doesn't start with Green Day or any East punk band. It starts with Motown and Wu-Tang, you know, because my uncles listen to the Wu-Tang, I listen to the Wu-Tang, and my grandparents who raised me listen to, like, Motown, blues, you know, West Montgomery. And, like, when it comes to black music, it's inherently community, it's community-driven, and it's collaborative, and it's revolutionary. I'm not going to break down why the three of those things are that case, but I definitely wanted to be that as a musician, because A Day Without Love is about rising above adversity. So I had to think to myself, I want to collaborate with as many people, because I know a lot of people, and I'd be a dumbass not to, like, collaborate or write music with them. You know, some collaborations haven't worked. But a lot of them have. And when I say some, I mean, like, just two. one is, like, a song that, like, we wrote, and it was cool, but I don't think it's going out. The other one, like, the actor just stopped, like, you know, being, like, in touch with me. So, you know, that happens. I can't really speak too much for that. But the whole point that I wanted to pretty much share is, I went out and said, you know what, I'm going to go out and do, like, 15 collaborations. People might think from an industry perspective, like, are you going to overwhelm your listeners? I mean, given the fact that my Spotify followers naturally went from 160 to now 403, and it's probably going to be higher, and I'm saying that without hubris, by the time this comes out, I'm going to say, no, I didn't overwhelm my listeners. So that was the first thing I was worried about. The second thing I was thinking to myself is, like, I could be in silence and, like, not release anything, and then when I'm done all the collaborations, drop it. And then I thought to myself, well, the pro to that is, like, you know, you have this big, diverse release that a lot of people get excited about, but the con is I have to maintain 15 to 17 different relationships and then potentially 17 different producers and then one mastering engineer. Most mastering engineers charge between $25 to $70 a song, and I'm gonna say, like, where am I gonna get 17 times 30 or, like, $80? You know, that's just way too much on production costs. Like, I'm not sure. Ed Sheeran did that on his collaborations final, and my brand influence is just not that high for me to realistically do it. So I thought, I'm going to do this piecemeal. And, you know, if a label wants to be, like, Cardcaptor Pokemon Collector about my discography and, like, you know, put it all together the same way that Bring the Horizon got their shit done with their back catalog, by all means, do it, as long as I get the money. So that was the second thing as to why I'm doing it the way that I'm doing it, where I'm making new releases once every 6 to 8 weeks. The third thing is, I thought each of these singles, I could do a different campaign or promotional strategy or collaborative creative projects. So some of these collaborations, like, were just studio records and I didn't go on tour with them, so I made my own music video, or, like, I just wrote the song and the other person did the production. Some of these singles were just, like, just drop it, and, like, you know, they've ended up in, like, college kid documentaries and things like that. So, like, I pretty much wanted to open my mind to just being a creative person instead of a DIY artist, because a lot of times the word DIY artist, you think, oh, this person's trying to play Warped Tour Fest. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to really think about, what do I like and what do I enjoy, and how can I create that and share that with the world? So that's where I'm at now. And then internally, without, like, thinking about the relationships I have with other people, like I just expressed, I just wanted to be better. And that's kind of, like, what I'm at. Like, I definitely think I'm not the songwriter I was a year ago before going into this. And I just realized there's another release. I have a release with the EDM DJ, with who's really killing it right now. His name's Shizlo. He's the DJ to Bacanero, they're signed out to Dimmak Records with Steve Aoki. And I have a single with him called The Cycle. And I'm working on doing another song with him. And we're just waiting on the vocals for that. So, I mean, all I'm doing is playing guitar, but still, it's a collaboration. So that's it for all my collaborations. But I really just want to get better. And that's like my goal at the crux of it is like rise above myself, rise above the adversities against me, and inspire other people like me to believe that they can do it. Because I definitely think when it comes to underground rock music, it's kind of a community that claims to be open-minded, but in practice isn't. You know, there's a certain mentality, there's a certain culture that not everyone can identify with, you know. And that culture is like that higher level of socioeconomic privilege. Just on the face of it, these are white people, you know, and I'm not a white person. And that comes with a bunch of like exclusionary attitudes. There's a lot of like, if you didn't listen to, you know, insert band from the 90s or 80s or even 70s, then you can't be part of the club. And I want to inspire people that never felt like they could fit in because they weren't part of these like unbeknownst or unwritten contracts or ideals that they can fit in just simply by being who they are and telling their story.
Yeah, I think like it's really interesting like how the collaboration aspect is kind of not necessarily the way you're doing it, but like, you know, typically when you think about like other people like coming in to help out with writing songs and stuff, it's like in the DIY community, that's often seen as like, oh, that person's like a sellout. They have like co-writers and stuff. But like the way you're doing it seems like so organic. And like you mentioning kind of like not wanting to overwhelm people and how it's like helped grow things organically on your Spotify and stuff. It's like, that definitely, I think it makes a lot of sense, the kind of like rollout that you did, because it's like you're gaining with all these different people that you're working with, you're gaining like little bits of their audience along the way. And then they're like starting to follow you and get along with that. And it's like just introducing like everyone to so much more music.
True. And, you know, and not for nothing, like that whole, like they're selling out because they have co-writers. My first collaboration that got dropped was with an EDM DJ. Like, DIY rock music and EDM couldn't be any more different. And keep in mind, his principal, Shizlo, he's no different than us. Like, he writes in his bedroom, he drinks his seltzer water, he shares on Instagram, and like, and that's it, you know? And he plays shows, he's played in basements, I've played in basements, you know? His audiences might be different, but really, same methods and discipline. And like, if there's anything that I've learned during this journey and moving forward, is have the humility that you're just not good at everything and you can't do everything. You know, like, do as much as you can with what you have and make the best out of it. But what's great about collaborating is, like, I've learned something from everyone. And yes, sometimes they're, like, frustrating. Like, someone might not answer a text or multiple reschedules. But every single person that, like, I've collaborated with for the songs to come and the songs that have been dropped, I learned something from them, you know. So it's just, like, And if learning is selling out, then I'm the biggest fucking sellout there is. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, like, I don't know where I heard the saying originally, but I've heard like the saying like DIY isn't do it yourself, it's decide it yourself. And like kind of like you have the power to make things happen the way that you feel is best. And that definitely sounds like the kind of mindset you're like going into it with.
Exactly. And I'm also a fan of DIT, do it together, because like to the Front Fest in Lexington, Kentucky, not that long ago, and I met Ryan Mathers, who does so much shit. That's almost longer than everything that I'm doing right now. So Ryan, if you're listening to this, like literally, like I hope you see me as a brother because I see you as a sister, and I literally love what you're doing, you know. And that's a person that really holds that do it together mentality. For example, they use the Google form to recruit artists. Then after artists, like, Brian broke down, like, how much you're going to get paid, what you're supporting as a result of this festival. And that festival supports children who get kicked out of their homes after coming out, which is, like, a serious, serious problem that's being addressed, you know, down in Lexington. And then thirdly, and this is, like, if this isn't a whirlpool, I don't know what is, there's accommodations for different people's living and eating preferences, for staying over the night for the festival. So, like, with that being said, that's doing it together, because, like, Ryan has a team of people working with her, and then, like, everyone else is working together, and then during the festival, there's people from different parts of the U.S. with like minds sharing their thoughts, sharing their music, and talking about the adversities that they face. And, like, you know, DIYDIT doesn't necessarily always have to be activist-driven or pro-social, but I definitely think it's something powerful when you hear people that, you know, are writing similar stories but come from different pages.
Yeah, and I think one of the, like, recent episodes of the Your Dreams Not Memes podcast, you were talking about how, like, when you started out, you kind of wanted to, like, one of your main focuses was, like, building a community of storytellers around yourself. And it definitely seems like something that you've been successful with. So, like, could you tell me a little about that, like, process and the mindset that you went into it with?
So, I mean, this might sound corny as shit, but I grew up, like, on a creative level, liking poetry a lot and writing poetry. And, you know, when I would come over certain families, members houses, I would watch deaf comedy poetry, because I just love poetry. I read Langston Hughes, I read Maya Angelou, I read Poe. There's a bunch of other poets I read. I don't read poetry as much as I used to now. Then and now is the fact that there's a community around it, because people are sharing their stories about who they are. And when I started playing the guitar, what I really loved about it is I only went to open mics, and I met a lot of people that, like, you know, they're doing music in different capacities right now, but those people were like a team, you know, and where the relationship was then for me when I was just starting was, I don't know anything from guitar. Can you teach me how to play, you know, a G chord, or how could I syncopate my voice, this, that, and the third? And friendships got born out of that. And before I decided to turn this to A Day Without Love, I wanted to carry that mentality or that message with my songwriting and the people that I keep around. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then I also wanted to, like, hit on the fact, like, we've mentioned how you were doing, like, all these singles this year, and that's kind of a big kind of turn from Diaries last year with the 24 track, like, over an hour album. What have kind of, like, been some of the, like, similarities and differences between those two kind of, like, really strategies for you?
Between dropping an album versus dropping a single?
Yeah, and, like, such a long album too.
Okay, so when I dropped Diary, that was 100% self-recorded. I also made it sound like crap on purpose. It was a creative homage to the mini era of bands like, you know, Crywank, Cyberbully Mom Club, you know, Waxahachie, like all those bands, even Bon Iver, they were blowing up based on sounding like shit, you know? I'm not saying their music is shit, but, like, the audio quality, objectively, is shit. Like, some of these records, you'd hear, like, air conditionings and things like that. And I got inspired by that. Like, I thought it was really awesome. I hope no one just hears that one line and then runs away with it, because that's not what I'm saying. But anyways, I liked that concept, and I thought to myself, how can I explain why the fuck I got peaceful, or where my depression came from, or where a lot of my problems came from? Not all of them, but because you can never lay it all out on the table on a record. Some people say you can, but I think there's always stuff that's left for more. So I wanted to write a literal diary, and I used a podcasting microphone, you know, the Snow blue ball, and I just I think that's what it's called, snowball.
It's not called a blue ball.
And I just wanted to tell the story and see what came to my head. And I wrote actually 65 songs, and then I kept listening to them, and I put limits on myself, like, you know, no audio editing, no retakes unless it doesn't make sense. Only to the limited knowledge you have. Don't take this to a mastering producer. Don't take this, because a diary is raw. So I had to make it as raw as I could and make it honest. And that's why that album was long. And that's where that process came from. Mm-hmm. The singles, on the other hand, the process for them has been very organic and conversational. Like, there's a song that's coming out with Esther Hermes from Columbus, who now lives in Philly. She and I had been meeting in like a hospital. I'm not going to say the school because I don't want to, risk her education. She's in grad school right now. And we were meeting in a hospital, and she just was telling me who she was. And we were getting to know each other. Like, we met at a show, and, you know, we're really tight friends now. And we wrote a song based on trying to eliminate toxic relationships. And, you know, she showed me the tuning of guitar that she uses for her songs. And then I started writing some lyrics. And the next thing you know, we were writing back and forth. So each song had a different story. Like, in terms of the singles, like, some of them, I just wrote all the lyrics. I just needed a harmony. Other songs, it was like a work in process. So it all varies, but a lot of it was very organic. And we met in person for the most part.
That's rad. I guess I'd like to hit on the podcast, since we already brought it up a little bit. Just kind of like, I feel like it's, it reminds me somewhat of like Shane Told's Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, in that it's like two musicians talking to each other for the most part. But it feels kind of even more intimate than that. And it, kind of more like matter of fact in a way. So could you talk a little about just kind of like how you approached that and how you came up with the idea and stuff?
Okay. So the concept, I'll answer in reverse. The concept of Dreams Not Memes, Marceline, don't hate me if you're listening to this, but you're a busy student, so who knows, came from my friend Marceline. Marceline's a musician that I collaborated with, went on tour with for like almost 2 weeks, and I was in her car, and I went on this like random rant, and I just was all like, you know, what's wrong with society is these fucking kids are all about memes. It's always memes, 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 memes. You know, if we want to get anything done in society, we got to focus on vision and dreams. So I was like, I believe in dreams, not memes. And then she was just like, you're such a dad, Brian. Like, you know, like she just laughed at me, right? And on my 30th birthday, which was last year, I'm 31 now, I get this hat. And it's like literally the caption of the podcast, and it's me with that hat that says dream. And like, I just was like, really, I had that hat in October, and I literally was just reading Spotify articles on just like making yourself better, things like that, because, you know, I'm definitely like not a perfectionist, but I'm always striving to like improve myself. And I went on this podcast earlier this year called Show Me Your Playlist, and I was introduced to Anchor. And Anchor is like, you know, a streaming platform that as of today officially is acquired by Spotify. And they, you know, let you do podcasts via your phone, and that's what Katie of Show Me Your Playlist uses. So I thought her DIY approach to podcasting was really cool. Then I noticed another friend of mine, like, Talk to Me Until I Have a Girlfriend. Alex, if I fuck that up, I'm sorry. His title's really long. he used it too, so I was like, you know what? Why don't I do it? But I want to do it the way I want to do podcasts. Because sometimes, like, admittedly, I don't listen to podcasts because the people talk so inauthentically. So I was like, how can I be authentic and just, like, get to the whole point of, like, just the realness of music? Because the real thing that I think is missing in rock music and DIY is authenticity. Like, there are too many mystery men masks in rock music, and we find out the truth behind things in the worst ways possible. But like hip-hop, which is something I also like, you know, we have the Breakfast Club, we have Ebro in the Morning, we have so many shows where like the journalists are hitting the real questions, which, by the way, I love that you're doing this, Scott, and I hope you don't give up, because like you're keeping it real, and that's what we need in rock music, you know. So I thought, why don't I take advantage by talking to the people I collaborate with? And I was doing vlogs, and like they were getting some buzz, but not enough that I liked. And not to say that I gave up on vlogs, but I was doing vlogs that addressed that, with people I collaborated with. So I made Dreams Not Memes to tell the story behind the project that I have. So, you know, season one was just people that I've collaborated with, like trumpet players that played trumpet on songs I haven't released with. Shout out Taylor Kelly. You know, guitarists that played guitar with me. Shout out, you know, Braden Bauer of Past Life. Like all sorts of people. And then I want to basically take it further to just like, still it's about the relationships I have with people, you know. Like I'm not just interviewing any old band or any old musician or artist, but the Dreams Not Memes is just pretty much about the ups and downs and struggles of being who you are. Lunch by myself after work, I mean during work, and some dude, I mean I knew him, but like I haven't seen him in like 5 years, came up to me and was like, dude, I really fucking like your podcast. I listen to it every week. It's motivational. And that's awesome. that's kind of like why I do it. Because I want people to be comfortable with who they are and recognize that like what they're doing is not in me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool, like the fact that you do have that existing relationship with the people that you talk to. I think it kind of, even if the listener doesn't have a knowledge of the person necessarily, it kind of gives them a sort of different insight to it. And it's really cool how you kind of use it as like a 360, like promotional thing for your own stuff and for like the people that you work with. Like, yeah, I think it really serves like those multiple purposes in a cool way. And then I also wanted to talk about just, I'd like to generally kind of ask like what, go back in the past, you know, what was it like? I mean, you're Philly born and raised, right? And yep. Like, what was it like for you, like growing up, and like, how did you kind of first get started in with music?
So growing up in Philly was a fucking whirlwind to say the least. we could have another episode for that. But in terms of just being exposed to music, for starters, my uncle was a hip hop producer. So like, the first half of my life, maybe even more than that, I knew nothing about playing guitar or like, you know, thinking about being a musician. Like I've been writing lyrics since I was 11, but like in terms of like playing music, I think those are two stories. So like I didn't go to high school going to house shows. I went to nightclubs and parties and ran from the cops from keg parties and stuff like that. No, I wasn't part of like a gang or anything like that. I definitely was a good kid. Like I was a junior deacon in church. You know, I you know, I work a job. I taught Taekwondo. You know, I was part of an activist organization. I walked a mile in her shoes. I helped kids get literacy that like were less privileged, like things like that. And I met this guy named Nick when I was 16. But then he like planted the seed. That's when I got my first drink, my first blunt, and my first introduction to AFI. And then from there, it was like, I saw Hello Goodbye. That was my first concert. And then my first like heavier concert, not going to say hardcore, because that's a whole nother debate. I saw Alisana, Dance Gavin Dance, and A Day to Remember all in one show. That was in like 2005 or six. No, it was definitely in 2006 at an Allentown venue that no longer exists. And then playing in front of people, because I picked up the guitar at 18, and I was just learning. I didn't start playing in front of people until I was 19 or 20, and I was doing that on open mics. I did not call my project A Day Without Love. I did write a poem called A Day Without Love, but that's when it became, I know people that play music, and I want to know what their communities are like, because a lot of my ideas around community don't come from DIY ethos. It doesn't come from, you know, the older kids taught me this shit. It came from going to church. I know, which might sound crazy in 2019, but it really did come from church. You know, accepting people for who they are. That came from my grandma. Being a community, that just came from like meeting a lot of good people. But that's kind of like how I walked in at the start of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like how do those like kind of roots that kind of differ so much from a lot of the people in the scene, how does that kind of like affect the way you view and like interact with like the DIY rock scene?
I think there's definitely people like I've bumped heads with, like some people with bigger names. I'm not gonna like make this a names who's thing, but I think it's been helpful as well as hurtful. I'll start with the negative part first. It's been hurtful because, like, some people definitely think I'm too outspoken or too friendly or too transparent, and everything needs to be underground, and I'm just almost like, dude, it's the fucking internet. Like, nothing's underground anymore unless you're writing letters. And, you know, last time I checked, the Scarlet Letter, like, was that was many hundred years ago. So that. There's, like, those philosophies, and I always, like, look at the microaggressions that occur between different communities, and that definitely irks me sometimes. And I don't have trouble holding back my tongue musically or, like, in person. If this was a pie chart, that's, like, 10% of my experience. I mean, at a time, it was more like 60% of my experience, and that was, like, you know, when people were throwing guns in my face to play guitar, like, that's actually happened. But now I think I hear a lot of people, and I mean this on the road, not so much Philly, sometimes Philly. There are definitely some spaces in Philly where I feel really safe and comfortable. And I don't mean that from, like, a safe space perspective, but more of, like, an anxiety perspective. Mm-hmm. Where I think what I have to say is not just validated, it's more, like, understood. And I think other people kind of relate because they've experienced similar things. Mm-hmm. And what I'm really addressing is gatekeeping and exclusivity in DIY cultures. I don't think it's rational because, let's be real here, a lot of us would like to be rock stars or have a platform, but a lot of us don't have a platform, so why would we separate each other? And I think a lot of times when I say that, it makes people feel uncomfortable because they're self-conscious that they're separating people. But then I would add, if you think you're separating people, you probably are separating people.
And I mean, that sounds like it kind of ties pretty well into your experience, like, recording the documentary. So could you tell me a little bit more about, like, that, the, like, coming up with that idea and the process of filming it and stuff?
Certainly. So I teamed up with a local videographer, Brianna Spaz. Brianna, if you hear this, you can smack me next time you see me. And Brianna is, like, my go-to photographer. I can't say enough how much I think she's just a fucking awesome photographer. But she's more than a photographer. She's a videographer. And because she wanted to make a documentary about a band, I told her what I was thinking. And I said, you know, A Day Without Love is about my story with rising above adversity through my own lenses, but it's also about connecting and being harmonious with the world. And I have a number of documentaries that I want to do before, like, I can officially say I'm content and done with this project. And one of them is about understanding cultural differences in America, because Philly is definitely known for being radical, but, you know, it's Philly. Like, what you know about your local scene does not always translate to every music scene. Like, there's ups and downs to every music scene. So I said, well, how about we do, like, a cross-regional tour and talk to people about their music communities? So she was like, I'm game. So our first interview kind of set the tone for everything. We talked to Sonic Sam from Lancaster, and they talked about why an all femme booking organization is important in Lancaster. They talked about their microaggressions that they had to face coming up in the music scene, and how they wanted to give a voice to the voiceless as a result of their organization. And that's when the tone of the interview, you know, 17 interviews later, because it was an 18-day tour, and we did about 17, 18, 16, something like that. We got like 18 hours of material. And we wanted to talk to people about, you know, how do they deal with inclusion, safe space culture, consent culture, and how it relates to the Me Too movement with music and things of that nature. So the documentary is called Safe and Sounds Film. And in like one or two sentences, like, the documentary is about how America in all different places, bars, art spaces, colleges, you know, coffee shops, they're all doing their part to make America feel a little bit more comfortable, especially during a time where we live in a society where it's no longer microaggressions, it's very much macroaggressions. And what I mean by it, I'm talking about the way people feel and experience life. Like, for example, I'm talking to you via Bluetooth in my car, and a cop just rolled next to me very aggressively. And the first thing that came to my mind is, I might get shot, but it doesn't look like it. But case in point, the reason why I'm thinking that is just the biases of what's been happening in current events, not just lately, but my whole life. Mm-hmm. So I think he really wants a donut. I'm in a Wawa parking lot. And he's walking really fast and he forgot to turn off his lights. But that's how that documentary has come about. We're really about showing that inclusion is not just a regional thing. Safety is not just a regional thing. Consent is not just a regional thing. Diversity, which ties in with inclusion, is not just a regional thing. It's an American thing. And it's important that music cultures have a voice and speak for progressive thought, because historically, music has always been a progressive thing and it's been radical, whether it be to the right, left, or diagonal. And through that, it's a transformation that helps other people think for themselves. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, was there anything that kind of like surprised you or kind of like went against your expectations when that came out in the documentary and the interviews?
So to be 100% honest, and this is generalized, but what surprised me, because I don't want to spoil too much, and thanks for talking to us, because like we definitely have like the due date is TBD, but I want to talk about this as much as I possibly can, is that I experienced some pretty messed up things in Baltimore. One of those things is a man tried to shoot me while I was taking pictures. I used to take pictures with a DSLR as a hobby photographer. And I walked back and he shot the shotgun while I was walking away. So that was the first thing that like happened. Another thing that happened to me is I got robbed while going on tour with Kate Dressed Up. And I don't mean directly like assaulted. I mean like her car got broken into. And I lost my book bag that had my camera in it and a bunch of my belongings. So I anticipated getting robbed, especially since I was with a camera person. I anticipated maybe even like going to jail just for being driving while black. That almost happened, sort of. I drove in Greenville, South Carolina with Brianna. And just for reference, Brianna's white. I can definitely say without shame, it's definitely possible that if I was alone, I could have went to jail. And they claimed that I made an illegal right turn, which is not a thing. And I really think I was driving while black, and the cop talked to me, not going into the story too much. They basically gave me a fake warning. The cop said that they were a musician too. And I was like, no, you're not a musician too, you're a cop. And they also said they did video. I was like, no, you don't do video, you're a cop. And they put my music on Spotify, so that makes me feel weird because I have like anti-cop songs. So that happened, and that was one of the things I was anticipating. And the other thing that really surprised me is seeing progressive as well as liberal communities in the South. Like at Mississippi, when I played at Ole Miss, I literally was like expecting to hear some N-bombs, but I didn't. You know, a lot of people welcomed me with open arms and were very kind to me. So a lot of what I thought, like in terms of experiencing adversity, I thought was going to happen, but it didn't, which I'm glad, because I don't say this with pride, but like, you know, I've ran away from the KKK when I was a child. That's a whole nother story, but I've seen some shit that most like modern black people don't see, such as like, you know, seeing a black guy get beat up by the police and things like that. So yeah,
for sure. Yeah, and you've mentioned kind of like how you did the tour with Brianna, and you're kind of used to touring solo. So I mean, could you talk a little bit about kind of both of those things, and especially your experiences with touring solo?
Certainly. Touring solo as an extrovert is fucking mind-wrecking. I mean, I know I definitely kind of put up a front that I'm having the time of my life. And part of me is having the time of my life. But I mean, I say this not with pity. I say this not with self-loathing. But I simply don't have friends that are committed enough to me to play with me 90 times out of the year, or 70 or 80 or 60 times out of the year. And it sucks. So traveling alone sucks a lot, but it's also amazing because you get to connect with people in the most unbiased ways possible. And you get that experience for a short time and then you move on. And I don't mean move on like you forget the person, because the connection's still there, because you're leaving a part of yourself there. So it's both great and bad. Wow. Even though I'm not into astrology, I just sounded like a Gemini there. I am a Gemini rising. But like, it's both good and bad. And also, a lot of times I thought about giving up because, you know, I'm on that mega bus. I'm sleeping on a pillow or my own hoodie against potentially dirty glass. And, like, I don't know if anyone's really listening to me except for, like, this stranger from the intertext or whatever, just to, like, hear my music. So, like, it's cool, but it's a struggle, you know. And at the same time, it's not even just about, you know, do I have people that are willing to tour with me? It's like, I do have, in my opinion, realistic expectations. And that's like, I want to practice with someone 1 to maybe 3 times a week and have a practice room and like make A Day Without Love about A Day Without Love, not like ulterior motives. And a lot of times people join bands for other reasons, like because they want friends, because they want free weed, because like, you know, they just like house shows. They want to do as many house shows as possible. Band of people who are about music and a message and want to and collect and create on that basis. And I just haven't found that. And if having standards is selling out, then again, I guess I'm a sellout. So touring with Brianna, you know, I've been on the road with like Izzy Heltai, who's a songwriter, and they are doing a Kickstarter. I don't know when this is coming out, but Izzy, I really hope you win that Kickstarter, because they are a very like amazing songwriter. And I've also gone on tour with Marceline. I've gone on tour with bands, like things like that. So it hasn't always been alone, but I can definitely say the contrast of being on tour with Brianna has been like, it's been like having a little sister and a mom at the same time. I still owe you a Design for Tour Mom t-shirt, by the way, Brianna. Because like I never went on tour and someone told me like straight up, like, yo, the relationships and friendships you have, they're crossing your boundaries, and I could see it in your face. You know, like I've never had someone care about me like that. I never had someone go like, yo, you got to take your vitamin C and B12 on the road, or Brian, stop talking, go to bed. Like, that's what it was like. And like, at times it was petty, but like real talk with someone like Brianna made me realize, like, I mean this personally and musically, I just need people that care about me. And I mean that not so much on a like, oh, you like my stuff on the internet. I mean like, you call me, like you want to practice with me, you want to work with me, you want to help me draft my press release, like you actually want to work with me. And that's what kind of touring this year and previous years has been like, helped me learn. Like, it's helped me allocate my energy and understand where good people exist.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely sounds like those are very wholesome answers you've been giving. And like, I love the just kind of the overall kind of like communal feel that you have about you and stuff. So that's really rad.
It's time again for the mid-show shout out. Today, I want to highlight Endless Scroll. Each week, Eli Ennis and Eric Bennett are joined by a guest. Together, they review some of the buzzworthy new music releases, and then interview the guest to learn more about who they are and why they love music. Eric and Eli both have amazing music taste, and I found plenty of stuff I might have missed otherwise. So even without taking into account their intriguing discussions, Endless Scroll is a great music discovery tool. So check it out!
And then I guess to kind of head towards wrapping things up a bit, I like to ask, what was like a recent challenge and a recent success that you've had?
I was in Kent, Ohio, and had a radio interview in Bloomington, Indiana with Rylan of the Riot Room. and I only got an hour or 2 hours of sleep, and I had to drive 5 hours to get there, and it ended up taking me 7 because I was just so sleepy. And I drank all the sugar-free Red Bull and other energy drinks, Bang, yerba mate, and I almost crashed. So that's what I mean by the learning about yourself and about things on the road. So that was like a definitely a big struggle for me. A recent success, not so much musical related. No, I'll keep it to music. Is today, and I know this is not going to come out today, I'm finishing a story. See, and I created this model. I'm not going to say I'm the first to ever do this, but I wanted to do shows where songwriters and bands did stripped down versions of their songs that they put out or are about to put out, and they told the stories behind the songs, and like people would listen to those experiences so that people get more personal feelings behind songs that they dig. And today, Pocket Vinyl is playing, and Pocket Vinyl is an independent band that's a duo. And they hold the world record for doing all 50 states in the shortest amount of time. They did 50 states in like 47 days or 48 days.
Damn.
On top of that, they're not signed any label. Eric plays the piano and ballads. And his wife, Liz, does paintings, and they're like live paintings. Like, she just makes up stuff on the spot, and then at the end of their set they auction it, and it's a really cool, engaging experience. So I think that's a success, because I've been doing it for the month. I don't think I'll do it again, because great, it was really fun. It wasn't as well attended as I liked it to be, but it was still a success just because I was able to do it. And shout out to the Grape Room, shout out to Kevin McCall for letting me do it. So it's been a vibe.
Yeah, and I'm sure for like the people who've attended, it's like I'll always love seeing things like that where bands kind of like dissect themselves and stuff, which, I mean, that's obviously part of the reason I'm doing this podcast. So I'm sure it's like a special thing for the people who are there.
Yeah.
And then I always like to ask at the end for either just a piece of advice or something that you've been thinking about in general lately, either about music or life, that you would just like to share.
Real talk, I hope. One, that I don't have to do this alone for so long, because granted, this is a solo project. I would like people that are in it to win it, not for my money and my wallet. That's why I don't really like push myself to labels or PR too much. So I hope I get a team, and not to say that I don't have support, but like the type of direct support that a musician really needs.
Was there anything that like I haven't hit on that you've been like dying to talk about or anything?
Right now, I just want people to listen to Good Friends Are Hard to Find. That's the single to this documentary. And just follow me and keep in touch with me. Like, I got a couple things coming out in November. I'm going to be exploring the U.S. a little bit more. And then I'm just going to still post stuff, but keep it pretty chill so I can write and sit down and write and hit the gym and focus on my personal goals.
And with that, dear friends, it's time to say goodbye once again. Thanks so much to Brian for being a pleasure to talk to. Please do check out A Day Without Love. With the sheer scope of recent collaborations, there's sure to be something you'll enjoy. Subscribe to Dreams Not Memes, give Good Friends Are Hard to Find a stream, and keep your eye out for the documentary coming next year. A special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyOnTheCallPod@gmail.com. Until next time, keep on keeping on.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.